Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Beetlejuice, The Front Room, The Killer's Game, Speak No Evil, and The Substance.
Oh!
I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecca and super producer Craig Stanton.
Hello!
How are you, gentlemen?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, AJ. I'm great.
Yeah. Patriots play tonight.
Patriots play tonight, and I was at the Patriots last game.
Wow. Which
I was going to talk about, actually.
And
good segue.
They're a professional team, or are they like an amateur outfit?
No, they have not been, relegated?
Relegated.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's cool. That's fun.
Well, isn't though? This. Like, we're not a sports podcast, but we do review viewing experiences, and I will tell you, football is better viewed on television, full stop, period.
I've always said that.
Never has it been more clear to me than the game I was at this past Sunday.
Well, here's...
AJ could backwards crab walk to Foxborough from his house, and he's still watching.
And I've refused to go there, unless it's with you or a special occasion. Here's the thing with watching a football game. It has to be between like October 1st and November 15th, because you can be comfortable outside and not be miserable and just fucking pound beers and be okay with it. If it's early in the season, like now, it's too hot. And if it's later in the season, it's too cold.
Yeah, let me tell you.
The Goldilocks zone, as they call it.
Let me tell you about it, because
Craig agrees.
It was too early in the season. It was hot.
Yeah.
I was sweating blood the entire time. Brought a hat and long sleeves, thinking I was going to try to avoid the sun to a degree.
Sure.
Thinking the sun would be, you know, above me, but I'm not an astronomer, AJ. So instead, I have the sun directly to my left, and I sunburn one side of my face. And all week I've been dealing with Harvey Dent jokes and people asking if I was in one of those ESPN, the Ocho slapping competitions, to which I immediately reply, you should see the other guy. But the point is, it was miserable, only to watch us lose in overtime.
I mean, it was a great game. One, two, you can't blame anyone for the way you have very fair skin. That's a you problem, not a sun problem. The sun hasn't moved in billions of years.
I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just sharing my experience. Mistakes were made.
Related, okay. You and I went to a day game Red Sox game a couple of months ago now, and we both got freaking torched. So you had
That's
recent
true.
Experience of misplaying this same situation.
The funny thing, though, is the last time Bill went to a Patriots game was last year, where we sat in a monsoon for 4 hours.
Oh,
I think Foxborough
God.
Had never gotten that much rain ever. It was
Waterlogged.
Basically a flood. Yeah.
Never been more uncomfortable in my life.
That was the first game of the season, Tom Brady game versus
the Bucks
Eagles.
Game.
No,
Night
the
game.
Eagles game.
Oh, the Brady dedication game.
Yeah, Brady dedication game.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then we went to like a restaurant to wait out the traffic, and we were just sitting in waterlogged clothing, and it was
gross.
Except for fan of the show Ryan Davis, who wore sandals and a bathing suit. The smartest play out of everybody.
Yeah.
You got to lean in.
You got to lean in.
Anyway, so that's what I've been up to. AJ, what's new with you?
Been watching a lot of kids movies.
Okay.
James is now at the point where he can like sit down and watch a movie and kind of like understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. To an extent. So we've watched Hotel Transylvania 1 and 2, which is pretty good. I don't know if you know a lot about Hotel Transylvania, but...
Never seen them.
It's a Happy Madison thing. It's Adam mm-hmm. Sandler plays Dracula, and all his buddies are, you know, Frankenstein and the Invisible Man and things like that.
Right.
Hilarious. Sight gags, but it's Adam Sandler. His shtick after two movies gets kind of old, you know?
Sure.
When he does like the Adam Sandler voice, you know, when mm-hmm. you're just like, shut up. And then I watch Kung Fu Panda.
Oh my God.
The first one. Bill, I have chills. I forgot how good Kung Fu Panda is.
So hilarious. Like, laugh out loud hilarious.
10 out of 10. One of the best animated films of all time. No questions
Agreed.
Asked.
Agreed. It would be in my top 10 for sure.
Yep. Soup to Nuts. James loved it, especially when he does the old skadoosh.
Sure.
It was just amazing. It was so fun to watch. And then I almost threw up watching an old movie, Bill. Can you guess? I'll give you two hints. Seal.
Yeah.
AMC intro.
Oh, AMC intro being Nicole Kidman.
Yep. Okay.
And then Seal, I want to say the singer.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So it's Batman Forever, obviously.
Yeah, I watched Batman Forever. I almost threw, I had to take a Dramamine about 15 minutes in because I wanted to projectile vomit all over my living room.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw that?
So last time I saw Batman Forever, 2 decades. I would probably say 20 years probably, because that would put me at, that would be, it would be probably over 20 years now.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw it was actually in the theaters. The entire movie is filmed on a Dutch angle. It's just skewed 45 degrees.
That's Schumacher's thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just disgusting to be a part of. I never want to watch it again, and I hope I never have to watch it again. It was that bad.
Yeah. I feel like I will let it live in my memory as a, 13-year-old or whatever.
As you should.
And just leave it that way. Because I loved it. I remember watching it all the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, it's awful. So don't watch it. Bill,
baby!
You are. Yeah. The best part of that. The best thing that came out of that was that 100%. Was that song. Bill, did you watch anything? Of course you watched something. Stupid question.
I watched, besides the many things we're going to discuss in this episode at length, I did watch Midnight in Paris.
Ooh.
Woody Allen. Classic.
One of my favorites.
Haven't seen it in a long time. I should say I haven't seen the movie in full in a long time, but I will say every, 6 to 9 months, I will pull up just Corey Stoll's scenes as Hemingway and watch that because I think it's one of the greatest things ever put to film. This time I actually sat and rewatched the entire movie. And it's good. You know, it's a cute movie.
Yeah.
My only knock on it, watching it again, is the charm starts to wear off a bit given the pace. Like it starts to really feel a little sluggish by the end and a little repetitive.
Yeah.
I think the first half is magical. But then eventually it just kind of reaches a point where it's like, they fight during the day. He goes into the past at night, repeat. Like after a few times, you're like, all right, I kind of get the cycle. Let's like conclude the story, please. And it's a 90-minute movie. So that's saying something when it comes to pace. But again, I think any individual scene is great. And I think Corey Stoll as Hemingway steals the show.
Yep.
And Owen Wilson is charming. I think it's a fun movie.
Hit the nail right on the head. I wish they did it. Like, I wish he went into the world back in the past, like 3 times and had a little bit longer time in there. So there was a little bit more of like a arc of like discovering it, how it's affecting his relationship. And then like what the outcome is afterwards or leading up to, the breakup, et cetera. So yeah, but it's just a great weird movie.
Yeah. It's a great one. It's an easy one to watch. It was fun.
I don't remember any of that about One Night in Paris.
No, Midnight.
Midnight in Paris.
Oh, Midnight in Paris. That makes more sense.
Okay.
How's it going? You're on fire today. In the news, Bill, the 76th annual Primetime Emmys for Excellence in Television were handed out last week. Shogun and the Bear led with the most wins, while Baby Reindeer took Best Limited Series. Did you watch the show? And what are your reactions?
I did not watch the show at all. I saw like one clip of the Levy father and son combo that hosted. It seems like they did okay. The general consensus was it was a pretty boring and mundane but fine broadcast. But I did not watch it. The only award show that I will actually sit through is the Oscars, which is like a love-hate watch situation. Otherwise, I really don't bother. As far as my reactions... It seemed pretty predictable. I mean, we talked about it when we talked about the Emmys nominations when they came out. And Shogun was an amazing show, and it won everything, basically.
Sure did.
The only thing that's interesting about Shogun is when it was first being put out, it was originally going to be a limited series because it's just based on a book, and they were going to tell the story of the book, and that's it. Then they decided at some point, I think based on its success, that, we might end up making another season of this, so let's make it considered a drama. And so they were able to modify category. And so it won everything because it was in the drama series section, even though originally it came out as a limited series. So like little weirdness there. But everything it won, I think it deserved. And The Bear season 2 is what we would have been giving out awards for, was very good. I think we all liked it. So no complaints there, really. And then limited series being Baby Reindeer, I've not seen, but I know Craig has. So
let's go to our baby reindeer expert, Craig Stanton.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of not doing a great job of representing this category on this podcast because I have not seen any of the other limited series is in this category. So all I can really say about Baby Reindeer was that it was really good. We watched it. We were like hooked instantly. It was sort of a random throw it on and like, holy shit kind of thing. Like just takes you for a pretty wild ride. And so it's very weird. It's very dark. It's very kind of fucked, but, you know, we were into it. It sort of burned hot and bright and then it was over and we moved on with our lives after we watched the whole thing in like a week. So yeah, I mean, it was rad. I thought, I'm glad
that's
it won, I suppose.
Hallmark of a good limited series, I suppose.
Love that.
Did you watch any of the broadcast, AJ?
No, I just caught clips online. It's just, I don't like award shows. They're for the birds.
Yep. The only thing that really stood out is the fact that the Bear won almost everything except the actual best comedy series, which went to Hacks.
Whoa.
So Hacks took the series win, but the Bear won almost in every comedy category. And then Shogun won essentially everything.
Yeah, that's the old Saving Private Ryan, Shakespeare in Love thing right there.
Yeah, great point. So, yeah, overall, I don't know. The Emmys didn't seem to stand out in any particular way for me this year.
Okay. Do you have a question for me?
Her, Jeff.
Do you have a 1-2 punch?
For in the news questions?
Yeah.
I do. I have a follow-up.
Oh,
a fast
okay.
follow, as you would
fast
say.
Fast follow. Yeah, in the biz.
I would argue the fast part, but go on.
I didn't know if AJ had any other thoughts on the overall show before we move into
my
next segment.
I feel like that was a good place to end it. I don't know why we have to tease it out. Good. We're good.
Fair enough. We got
it. Let it die.
All right. As discussed, AJ.
Yes.
The Bear cleaned up during the Emmys, but it did so in the comedy category, which led to plenty of outrage and discourse across the internet, especially on Twitter, where viewers and industry writers shared their feelings. A couple things that people said. I really, really need the Television Academy to fix the category criteria before next year because the Bear sweeping comedy over shows like Abbott Elementary is infuriating. All actors in actual comedies deserve better. Someone else said, Jeremy Allen White is an amazing actor in a great show who hasn't delivered one funny line in 3 seasons and the Emmys are broken. Someone else said, the Bear is great, the cast is doing stellar, but the show is not a comedy. And if I were an actor saying actual jokes in an actual comedy, I'd be fucking annoyed watching every award get snatched away. So yeah, a lot of thoughts about the categorization. And we know that the studios and the people that make the shows are able to submit their show into the category of their choosing.
Yeah.
And the Bear being categorized as a comedy, fair or foul? What's your take, AJ?
I mean, anything could be a comedy or a drama, depending on who you look at it, Bill. You know what I mean? It's all perspective.
I suppose that's true.
See, that's the correct way. That's the PC way to do it. The other thing is, like, I agree, but we're not changing this, right? This has been this way for how long, as far as I can remember. It's just a really weird way that the Emmys work in splitting up drama and comedy. And yes, they need to fix it. And yes, I think it will probably make a really, more interesting awards season and awards with things more correctly, quote unquote, in the right category. But that's not up for me or you to decide. That's for, you know, the Television Academy to fix that, I guess. You know, but like the Bear, like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, and then you look at season 3 of The Bear, and it was like, oh, like there was many more funny aspects and comedy written into that than you saw in probably season 2 and maybe half of 1. But it just, I don't know. Could there be like an anxiety category, like a mental breakdown category? You could throw that one in there.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, there are certainly parts of The Bear that are funny, sure, but it's funny because of the situation and the delivery of the lines. It's not written in the same way as in Abbott Elementary, where they're literally writing set up punchline, trying to write comedy. And like, those are two fundamentally different things. So it's hard to put them into the same category. I think The Bear falls in there often because it has some laughs and it's a half hour long, which like has become a differentiator often between comedy and drama, unfairly, but still.
Or can I actually make a really good suggestion? I can fix this right now.
Me too.
Ready? You're going to fix it or you want me to fix it?
You fix it first and then I'll fix it after.
Right? The rise in streaming and the ability to have longer form episodes, I think, is something we can lean into where you can keep comedy and drama separate. And then you can submit for, you know, longer, 45 minute plus is its own thing. And then short form, like 30 minutes or under, is its another thing.
So you'd be giving out four awards: best comedy long form, best comedy short form, and then best drama long form, best drama short form.
Boom. Mm. Right?
Interesting. Craig, what was your...
That way, like, well, if... Wait, hold on. In a situation like this, Shogun is in best drama long form, and then The Bear could be best drama short form.
Right.
And you,
right,
you give recognition to everyone. Abbott Elementary and those, like, comedies have their own place and can make some traction in some wins. But I think it's a better way to separate these things out, because media now is, you know, 30 minutes or an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I was going to say was that nothing needs to change other than whoever is voting on the winners needs to work into their criteria the comedic aspects of the show or the dramatic aspects of a show, you know, because clearly they're not judging The Bear as a comedy. They're just saying, wow, the show's incredible. It's on my desk. I'm going to vote for it regardless of category.
Right.
But if there was a part of the voting process that stipulated that you must like, you know, pick it due to its qualities in the genre, you know what I mean? Submit to whatever you want. But we're going to evaluate The Bear as a comedy. And as a comedy, it fails miserably because it's like, you know, mostly not funny. Any given moment in The Bear, you're not laughing. And at the most, or at best, you're probably getting a little chuckle as like a little bit of relief from whatever anxiety-riddled moment you were just in a moment ago or heading to shortly. So anyways, I think that's all I got to do is just be like, okay, sir or madam, you have submitted here to the comedy category. I'm going to evaluate this show based on its comedic merits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, that's fair. It's bad. I mean, it's bad. I still think the Martian winning best comedy at the Golden Globes is still like the ultimate example of the comedy versus drama nonsense. But this is a pretty compelling example as well.
This is what happens in like modern online discourse is like, you just have to have the same discussions every couple years because people think it's like the first time it's ever happened to them.
Right.
So like,
right,
yes, The Martian was the canonical example of this happening for the better part of a decade, and now it's going to be The Bear is going to be the canonical example of this happening for the next decade. You know, and it's just nothing ever changes.
Well, hopefully it changes at some point. And in the same way that, you know, everyone keeps talking about adding a stunt category, like eventually, hopefully that will get traction, and maybe someday the categorization will have some level of control versus just being submitted by the studio to whatever they think they have a better chance of winning, which is kind of what it is now.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some movies.
Let's do it.
Today, we're going to be talking about a shit ton of them. But first, we're going to be talking about Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. According to IMDb.com, after family tragedy, three generations of the Dietz family return home to Winter River. Still haunted by Beetlejuice, Lydia's life is turned upside down when her teenage daughter, Astrid, accidentally opens a portal to the afterlife. Bill, should I go see it?
No.
Oh, man. How do you fuck this up?
I so many different ways to fuck it up. I know that I am in the minority on this one. I know there are a lot of people that think it's a lot of fun, this movie.
Mm.
And I am not trying to be a naysayer or trying to be cynical or trying to be contrarian. I saw this movie opening show in IMAX. I was just as excited as anybody else. I love the original Beetlejuice. The movie comes on, you get the music and the font, and I was like grinning. I was in my glory. And then the movie starts and I'm just like, is this really what we're doing with this? Like, the whole movie's just a mess.
Is it a plot thing? Is it a directing thing? Is it an acting thing?
It's a big time script issue. So it's clear that there are lots of ideas in here, but no discipline on how to put them together into an actual script. And there's at least three storylines too many. Like, you need an A story, which is about, as you mentioned, Lydia Dietz. So Lydia Dietz's father, the father from the first movie that we know, is dead. And they have to go back to that town and home for the funeral and to sell the house and all this stuff. Beetlejuice finds out that they're going to be back in town and he starts to become mischievous. That's his thing. So like that's your A plot is like Lydia needs to return back to the house and Beetlejuice is still there. And then B plot is you have Lydia's daughter played by Jenna Ortega meeting a boy. And eventually that storyline like intersects with the afterlife Beetlejuice storyline. Like that's all you need. That should be the movie. And it could be a tight, maybe 100-minute comedy like the original was. But instead, they add in three or four more storylines, including things like Willem Dafoe's character, Monica Bellucci's character, that are just completely random. They don't go anywhere. And criminally, more than anything, they're not funny. Like, it's genuinely unfunny, this movie, most of the time. It doesn't work. Now, to be fair, yeah. Keaton is amazing. And I laughed out loud at the Beetlejuice sequences quite a bit. But that's only, you know, 15, 20% of the movie at best, and the rest felt like an actual waste of time. And so I just never could get behind it. It was just jumping all over the place between these multiple storylines that were unfunny to me. And also, Jenna Ortega, her talent is wasted because they just give her this character that is sulking and is like a brat the whole time, which is not her fault. It's an issue on the page, again, that you're wasting her as like the perfect actress to play Lydia's daughter. And they just give her a lousy character. And so I think it's another failed legacy sequel where they don't understand what made the original work. The original was an absorbing, like lean movie that followed a couple perspectives, with either the Maitlands or the Dietzes, and then Beetlejuice kind of jumping in between them.
Well, the first one to that point is that, you know, one of the co-writers of the first Beetlejuice was Michael McDowell, local guy, local writer. Stephen King called him, I think, one of the greatest novelists of our time, is that he got a copy of the script, I think, on first pass. I forget who did it, but was like, this makes no sense. Like, I get what you're trying to do, but like, you need to have some sort of context to start, middle, and end. And he was the kind of person that like put it all together, streamlined it, and then gave it back to Burton and was like, here's what you need to do to make this make sense. And to have a missing piece like that, that kind of was one of the key instruments of making the first one work. I mean, that's a huge missing part.
Yeah. Cause then you just leave Burton to his own devices and it just goes off the rails.
Weird. He's a weird fucking dude.
And like, to his credit, I will say from a production design standpoint, it is great. Like, it's very practical. It feels like the first movie. They actually do a really nice job with continuity there in terms of the costumes and the characters and the designs and the makeup and all that stuff is all really, really, really good. It's just that it's just not that funny. And I know some people told me they thought the Willem Dafoe stuff was hilarious. It did not make me laugh at all.
Yeah.
And the Monica Bellucci storyline, AJ, when you see this eventually, you're going to watch that storyline and you're going to text me immediately when it's over and be like, that was it. Like that, it's just such a waste.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot going on here. And unfortunately, none of it really clicks in the way that I think it should have. So I can't in good conscience give it a yes, even if the Keaton stuff was great. Keaton gets right back into the character in a way I didn't expect. I thought maybe he'd be rusty or something to that effect. But it felt like Beetlejuice. He was great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough.
That's what happens. You know, and then we see with I know me and you follow a bunch of guys online that, you know, they do these joke reels about like, hey, like pitch me on a movie or pitch me on a sequel. And they do these amazing jobs. Like it's one of those things that like, what if you brought in like some sort of fan fiction or someone who loved the world so much? I bet you like they would be so enthralled and could do such a better job, because sometimes when, you know, an idea gets pitched out and they bring a whole bunch of writers in that may not truly love, you know, the world that it's in, you know, they just find ways to make it more interesting. But it's like, nah, like stick to what you know. Like the first one was good because it was weird and crazy and morbid and hilarious and all those things. And to lose that, because it's been so long, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
There's enough time passed where you can kind of like, you know, you can kind of take a book, you know, a page from the first playbook and just figure it out.
No, they overcomplicate it. They get in their own way. So, yeah, it didn't really work for me. Did not work for me. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people already have seen it. It's made a bunch of money. And I think a lot of people will end up catching it on Max or whatever it may be. But for me, like, I have no intention of watching this one again.
Gross. Yeah. Gross, gross, gross. That sucks. Okay. Second film is The Front Room, starring Brandy. According to IMDb.com, it tells the story of a newly pregnant couple who are forced to take in an ailing, estranged stepmother. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes, with some caveats.
Okay, give me, well, what do you want to do, caveats first?
Well, let me take you through it. I mean, it's an A24 film. No, it is a thriller, but it is a thriller in name only. Like, I got to say, this is the main caveat. It is not scary at all. So there's like one jump scare, and that's kind of it. So if the bar for you to see this is because you see the advertising and it makes it look like a horror movie, don't bother. Like, you are not going to get scared at all. But for me, it actually worked better as almost like a deranged comedy in ways, because the tone is one of those movies where it's like between comedy and horror. And there are some things that are definitely meant to be funny, but okay. I read most of it as funny. The movie, did we do it? Brandy's married to this guy, and the guy's stepmother moves in with them, and she is insane.
And they're hunting a giant shark.
Is the old lady just like a crazy racist? Is that like the, is that the context?
Okay. That is part of it. So it's a mixed race couple. And so but her performance is so zany and over the top on purpose that led to me laughing out loud quite a bit. Tensions in the house start to escalate, hijinks ensue. And so the first act, I thought, was super tight. It's intriguing. You're like in it 100%. The second act, the mother's moved in, things go haywire. And then they start to kind of hit some of the same beats over and over again. And I it started to lose me a bit. But then in the third act, it doesn't go as like elevated horror as I thought it would. But the ending did satisfy me. Like, I thought the ending was really good. I was thinking about it like my whole drive home. Like, it did a nice job rounding it out. So like, I was entertained, I don't know, 70% of the time. Great opening, great closing, really good performances, competently shot, competently directed.
Okay.
I know it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but for me, I dug it. I dug it enough that I was like, I can't. Like, it didn't do enough things wrong that I could give it a no. Like, I thought it was legit.
Tight hour and a half.
Made. Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was good. Could it have been great? Sure. Like, if it was scarier or maybe a little bit deeper, there were some themes that they touch on, like the racism piece, that they kind of glance over. If they dug in a little bit more, they could have made the script a little more interesting. If they tried to make it scarier, they probably could have. Like, it definitely could have used some work. But as it was, I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I feel like films like that, I think of, what was that one you made me watch on an airplane? With the guy from... Dodgeball.
Justin Long?
Justin Long.
Oh, Barbarian.
Barbarian, right? Where you're like, you are like, what am I getting myself into? This doesn't seem... I know something's going to happen, and then it happens, and you're like, holy fuck, I didn't even see that coming. Like, I feel like this could be... I wish this was a film, now that you're talking, was one of those where you're like, oh, like, it's one thing, but then all of a sudden, like, 40 minutes in, you're like, my brain is melting, and I feel like I'm on drugs.
No, I wish that there was a little bit more of that by the end. I mean, we'll talk about a movie like that later, actually. But I wish this was more just like pretty standard escalation of craziness in the house. It's pretty boilerplate stuff in some ways. But again, I thought the performances were all good. It was an interesting story I hadn't quite seen before. And I dug the ending and made me smile. So enough for me to give it a yes.
Okay. The Killer's Game, starring the new Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Dave Bautista. According to IMDb.com, when a hitman is diagnosed with a terminal illness, he decides to take a hit out on himself. Cool premise. But when the very hitman he hired also targets his ex-girlfriend, he must fend off an army of assassin colleagues. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. I gave it a yes. And I agree. The premise is such a fun concept.
Genius.
He gets this diagnosis. He's got, he doesn't want to go out painfully. And so he takes the hit out on himself. And then, of course, at the end of Act 1, he gets a frantic phone call from the doctor saying they mixed up the test results and you're going to be fine. But now he's already got fucking assassins.
Yeah, he's got the whole John Wick army after him. Okay.
It's so like, great, great idea. I loved it. Plot-wise, it basically is the end of, I think, if I remember them correctly, I think it's basically the end of John Wick 2, beginning of 3, where he is like excommunicado and they all got a hit out on him.
Yep.
And, like, it's basically that, but like, feature length, and then you add in a bit of a romance because he's got the girlfriend in it.
It sounds fun to me.
It was fun. I thought it was fun. So stylistically, it's almost like a hybrid of Wick in terms of like the action choreography and Bullet Train.
So it's like hyper stylized.
Like they, just like Bullet Train, they introduce every like wacky assassin with like their own little intro and title card. Like nice. They do that whole thing. A lot of hand-to-hand fights, a lot of bladed weapons. Yeah, I mean, it's a good action comedy. Most of the comedy doesn't like land great, but there were a few gags that made me laugh out loud. And I think Bautista is always very good. He carries the movie. He gets to show some actual acting chops, which is kind of nice here love and there. The love interest is also very good. Do you have it pulled up? I forget her name, but she was in Kingsman. Was the first time I remember seeing her. And she was so good in Kingsman, I legit thought she did not have legs and that they wrote the role for her. Turns out that was part of the character. You know who I'm talking about?
Wait, what? Say that one more time. I think my brain just like, I think it, like there was a glitch in the Matrix. Lady who has blades for legs.
Blades for legs in the Kingsman. That was the first time I've ever seen her. And so when I saw that movie, I was like, oh my God, they found like an amputee actress to play this like amazing part. Yep. Turns out she was just really good in the role and they did a really nice job. And she does, in fact, have legs. She's fantastic.
Good for her.
And also you get Ben Kingsley in it, who gets to play like the wise, sassy mentor, which I mentioned we desperately missed that in the Crow movie.
Yep.
They have that in this movie. He crushed it, as always.
Of course, he's amazing.
And this movie was directed by a former stunt coordinator, so all those fights are just really, really solid. They're not overly cut. Like you can follow them. So yeah, I dug it. I mean, the comedy was a little stale. Some of the one-liners were kind of groaners, but you know, for an hour, was an hour and 40-something movie, action comedy,
hyper violent
for sure.
Okay.
I was entertained throughout. It's like a type of movie that a 15-year-old would, it's going to be their favorite movie ever for the next few years.
Love that.
So I dug it.
Speaking my language. Okay. Next film, Speak No Evil. According to IMDb.com, a family is invited to spend a whole weekend in a lonely home in the countryside. But as the weekend progresses, they realize that a dark side lies within the family who invited them. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes.
I'm seeing ads for this everywhere.
I was about to mention that.
And James McAvoy looks absolutely fucking yoked.
He's massive. It's like his final form in Split, basically. He's like that. The trailers and the endless ad blitz have definitely ruined the movie. So like,
okay,
and
cool.
I don't even watch trailers, and I still went into this movie and it was predictable because the trailers already kind of give it away. But even with that said, I still find myself pretty engrossed in it because of the performances. Because McAvoy is amazing, as usual. Mackenzie Davis is always amazing.
Yep.
Love her. It's a pretty standard reverse home invasion type of movie. It's definitely been done before. But it's executed really well. There's a good sense of pace. There's a good sense of sort of gradual escalation. I thought they handled that really well. They metered it out. People pretty much act like people. Like when you're in those, like the characters that are stuck in that situation are not acting like movie characters. Like they seem pretty well written. There's nothing too insane there. And the escalation of like each scene with them where they get a little weirder or something happens that's a little scarier. They handle it pretty well. It's not like all of a sudden you flip a switch and they're like insane. Like it's well executed in that way. And it definitely, let me tell you this, it works in an audience, like with an audience. Like it was intense. It's the type of movie where I was seeing it in a pretty full house. And at one point a character's being chased and they fell. And somebody like two rows back in like an anxious way was like, get up. like they literally yelled that out at the screen because like people were like in it.
Yep.
So when you have that type of reaction, you know, the movie's working. I would give it a yes. Again, it's not going to blow anyone's minds if you've watched movies like this before, but it's executed well enough that it's worth a watch.
Is James McAvoy one of the most underrated actors of our time?
Yeah, he doesn't get talked about a lot. You're right. I mean, it doesn't tend to come up. So yeah, I could say underrated.
There was a film that came up online. I think we should watch it. Maybe you've seen it. It was like a 2021 film. I'm trying to find the name of it. My son. Have you heard about this one?
No, I don't think so.
So I believe it's like the premise is that his kid disappears. But the way the director set up the movie is that he gave everyone in the cast the script and the scene notes, except for James McAvoy, who played the dad, because he wanted to see what would happen if it was like a real life situation where like you were a guy who was hell bent on finding your fucking son.
Oh, I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
To get like genuine confusion.
Yeah.
And
like you're going to be interrogated by the chief of police. Everyone knows what the questions are going to be, what the scene setup is going to be, but he has no idea. So like we're going to call you in and we're going to start rolling. So like action.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And apparently it's supposed to be amazing. So I think we should try to watch it before next episode. But yeah, like I feel like he's got a lot of range and does a lot of great stuff that we just don't really talk about.
Yeah, he's got the range for sure. Like Split obviously is an indication of that. But so is this movie in the sense that, you know, playing this character, you are on that knife's edge of like you have to be charming and thoughtful and fun so that these characters like want to spend time with you. But then you also have to just let those little flashes of craziness or evil spill out, but then kind of win them back over.
Yeah.
And McAvoy just does such a stunning job at it that you stay hooked into the movie. So he carries it really. Without him, this movie would probably fall flat, honestly. He sells it.
Love it. All right, to round out we have a bunch of spooky movies, huh? Spooky, scary season. The Substance, starring my girl, Demi Moore. Oh, my God. According to IMDb, a fading celebrity decides to use a black market drug, a cell-replicating substance that temporarily creates a younger, better version of herself. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes.
I
was really on the fence about giving it a blanket yes, but I had to, because it was like, it's so good. So this is the same writer director of the Australian movie Revenge. If you haven't seen that, I gave that a yes a few years ago. Still think about it. Good movie. So in this movie, we get into body horror. But it's got an absolutely...
I just looked at the fucking poster on your website and I'm already freaked out by the
poster. Yeah, there's a quote
yeah, you're
that
not
says
gonna make it.
Absolutely fucking insane is a quote that's on the movie post, the theatrical poster.
Yeah, no, it is not for the squeamish, but it has such a killer premise. The premise is so great. So Demi Moore plays an aging star. She has her own like fitness workout show.
Okay.
And they're gonna... Dennis Quaid plays like the exec asshole guy. He's going to can her to bring in someone younger. So then she gets turned on to this thing called the Substance that creates a better, younger version of yourself. And your consciousness moves over to that new body, but you have to switch back every 7 days. So there's a balance. And if you don't, shit starts to happen. And so she takes the Substance and basically births out of her back, Margaret Qualley, or Qualley. I still don't know how to pronounce her last name. We'll go with Qualley, I guess. So now there's a younger version and her mind is transferred into that one. And so she gets to be her younger self for 7 days. And then she has to switch and be her older self for 7 days. And you have to do it back and forth.
Oh, and so not you don't just have to go back and say what up every 7 days. You have to go 7 days on, 7 days off, 7 days on,
yes,
7 days off.
Yes. So she like hides the body of whichever one she's not in the bathroom, transitions, and then lives as one of them for a week and then the younger one for a week and back and forth. Mm-hmm. And there's supposed to be a balance and it's always you. You got to remember, like, it's always one person, but once you're in that body, you obviously act and think differently and you start to look at the other body and you're like, whatever. And so once you're in the younger body, obviously, why would you want to go back? But you have to go back or else things get imbalanced. And if it gets imbalanced, shit gets weird. So it's so good.
Premise seems cool and weird, but like the act of how
gross is it? Like on a scale of 1 to 10.
I mean,
is it over a 7?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I don't watch a lot of body horror, but oh man, I mean, I've seen some, but this is like me looking through my fingers during the third act.
I don't want to be in the same town where this movie is being shown.
But like, so just to finish on like the premise before we get into the technical, it's a great metaphor movie. Like it's not subtle. It's heavy handed. It's, you know, talking about youth and beauty and self-image and objectification and Hollywood and women in the industry and the current obsession with things like Ozempic. Like it's at its core, it's about someone who makes their living on their looks. And what do you do when you can't do that anymore? And like, how do you cope with that?
Yeah. No, I get the premise, but
the brilliant writing. And then you get into the actual, like, the things that start to happen. And the third act starts to become, that's when it really kicks in with the body horror. And I'm like watching through my fingers. And so like,
there's some times where I go to bed at night and I still think about the scene in the green room where they're trying to close the door and he kicks up. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I can give you just a small example.
Give me a little, give me a little niblet.
There is like a pulling out your own teeth scene.
Oh, no. I can't do teeth stuff. Yeah.
No.
Nope.
Yeah. No. Teeth start to fall out. Just start yanking them. That's a good one.
No.
Situation. Ooh. Fingernails popping
I'm gonna
off.
I'm going to puke.
Like, three yucks.
That's the mild stuff, AJ. That's the mild stuff.
That's mild?
Bro,
how do you not vomit it in your popcorn bucket?
I'm telling you, I was
you
looking
like that.
Through
You're a sick
my
fuck.
Hands.
You're a dirty little boy, aren't you?
What did your date think?
I saw this one solo.
Oh, you did? Good, thank God. Yeah, because Bill had his field notes out, and he was like, well, this is an interesting way to think about that.
No, it's great. The performances are remarkable. Like, people are saying it's Demi Moore's best performance ever, and I mean, I'm not going to argue it.
They clearly don't know anything. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you got to go in expecting the body horror. If you're walking in thinking it's a thriller, I haven't seen the ad, so I don't know how misleading it is, but if you walk in thinking it's just like a cool sci-fi weird premise thriller, you're going to leave vomiting. So like, you have to be cautious about what you're getting into.
Yeah, can't do it on a full stomach.
But man, it's good. AJ, you got to see it at some point. You got to.
No, the green room is like, Craig, have you ever seen the green room?
No,
I've told him.
They fight
times.
The Nazis. You got to watch it. But there's a scene, I'm going to spoil it. There's a scene where they're trying to
early on
escape. The dude puts his hand out like in a door and a dude's got a, like a utility knife. And just like, you know, when you open a Pillsbury crescent roll, like container and
gross.
Does it around the guy's arm. Oh, I'm going to puke.
Thinking about it.
I have a really
turn my air conditioner on because I'm sweating on my
I don't like it. Okay, Bill, I'm not going to watch it, but I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, come on. You got to see it.
I don't think I can.
For the writing and the acting and the...
Oh, yeah, all that stuff. Good. Yeah, but not like teeth and fingernails and fucking...
No, that stuff's at the end. That's at the end. That's at the end.
Pieces. Okay, let's talk about streaming TV. I'm going to puke.
Okay, great.
What are we watching?
Well, can we talk? It's funny you mentioned Green Room because I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
One of the Netflix movies I watched is called Rebel Ridge, and it is the same writer director of Green Room. So it's funny you mentioned it as well. And it's very good. It's one of those movies that should have been on a big screen. I would have rather seen it on a big screen. It's just another movie with amazing escalation of tension where, you know, the main character is like caught in an impossible situation and they're former military, of course. So it starts to become violent and it's just great. I don't want to say too much because the twists and turns are what make it, but Rebel Ridge on Netflix, definitely recommend.
I got it queued up. I've noticed it was like 2 hours and 20 minutes. Is the pace a problem?
A little bit.
Okay.
Act two drags a little bit, but still worth it.
Okay. Let's go to the top.
Oh, you want to start there? Okay.
Yeah.
So the FX has started, FX/Hulu has started its Aaron Hernandez docudrama, if you will, or dramatization of the Aaron Hernandez saga, fiasco, disaster,
life,
tragedy. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
And AJ and I both watched the first episode.
It's one of the worst things I've ever watched in my entire fucking life. I'd rather have someone green room my arm than to sit through another episode of that.
Wow.
That's not good. It's not good,
AJ.
Not what
I expected you to say.
Craig, it's fucking awful.
It's really bad.
It's awful.
Really bad.
Awful. The acting, trash. The acting, horrible. There's a whole scene where he goes down to the fucking swamp in Gainesville to meet with Urban Meyer, and they shoot it on like a Mandalorian, like 3D screen. Like on a 3D soundstage.
Yeah, couldn't afford to shoot in a stadium, apparently. It's
like, what are you doing?
Blatant and obvious. Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. I'm not going to watch any more of it. And, you know, these FX series are hit or miss. The OJ one I thought was great. The Monica Lewinsky one, so-so. Like, they depend. But I started watching the Clippers one, never finished it. But at least the Clippers one, you had Lawrence Fishburne as a very accomplished, great actor playing Doc Rivers, who's kind of like caught in the middle, kind of the audience surrogate. And so you had something to latch onto when you watched that show. This show, I've watched that whole episode of Fernandez, and I have zero interest in anyone or anything about it. So I'm out.
Horrible.
You're out. You're both out?
Horrible.
Big time out.
I'm out.
Hard out.
Yep, like Shark Tank. I'm out.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, Bill, what else?
Speaking of new shows that just started, I did watch the first two episodes of Agatha All Along. New Marvel Disney show.
Spooky.
It's okay. I mean,
You didn't say it was awful.
There's a very real possibility that I will forget that it exists and not watch any future episodes.
Okay.
But Catherine Hahn is great. She's always great. So, sure. Like, seeing her, she's got some good lines. Watching her is fun. But the show itself, I have zero idea what's actually happening at any given moment. So it didn't really do much for me.
Do they do like a little, you know, like you might have remembered on WandaVision or like How We Got Here or like
No.
They just dry guy right into it?
Well, I don't want to spoil the beginning of the first episode, but you go right into a new story of some kind. There's no previously on. There's no nothing.
Oh. Is it done in the same like campy style as WandaVision or is it its own take?
It is its own thing, I would say. I wouldn't compare it directly.
I don't know. I have the mental capacity to take that on right now. Okay. What else?
I also watched Apollo 13: Survival, a Netflix doc about Apollo 13.
Love that.
It's good. It's certainly worth watching. I gave it a yes on the site. I think that some of the archival footage they were able to get was cool. And the archival footage that they were able to restore to 4K is jarring because you're seeing like a ticker tape parade that like you know is happening in the 60s, but it looks like it was shot today.
Oh,
like
weird.
Some of the restoration footage is amazing what they can do with it, but it creates a weird cognitive dissonance. It's good.
But space and time start to collide and you question everything around you. Yeah.
Basically. I still would argue the best way to experience the story of Apollo 13 is still Ron Howard's 1995 masterpiece. Like, watch that. But if you wanted to watch a doc about it to get a little more background, they do a really nice job. I also appreciated when they're telling they have just interviews handling everything. They don't have a narrator or really a narrative in that way. It's just goes by interviews.
Okay.
But when an interviewee is describing a more technical thing, they do like an on-screen graphic to kind of demonstrate it.
And the
graphics are in that 1969 control room style. Like they do a really nice job just like making it part of the time. So I thought there were really nice flourishes in there. So I definitely recommend it for sure.
Love that. What are we watching soon? Tickets here?
Non-ticket related.
No.
The Penguin.
Stop.
The
Stop.
Penguin starts
Stop.
This week. What?
Craig didn't do his thing. I had someone text me, friend of the show, I'm not going to say who, said, Craig doing his tickets here line is the funniest part of every single
Guys,
episode.
Tickets!
There we go. Okay, continue.
Yeah, perfect. The Penguin, AJ,
quack,
starts.
Quack,
starts.
Quack, 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 quack.
That starts
why
tonight.
Why do we need this show? It's supposed to be so good, but I don't know why I need a patent bat. What do they call him? Patent man? Battinson. A Battinson verse. Penguin show?
Hey, man. I don't know, but I heard it's great.
Dum, 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 dum.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I don't know if it's prequel. I don't know if it fills in the gap.
No,
if
it takes
one or two,
place,
I have no idea.
It takes place exactly after the ending of the Batman movie.
Oh,
it's
great.
Like,
oh,
directly
a little
after.
Little bridge to Batman 2.
I'm into that.
I'll watch it. It starts tonight. We got to try it.
Okay. El Penguino.
Okay.
And then I have tickets to see... to see The Wild Robot.
Don't know what that is, but
new CG
cute.
Movie. Supposed to be really good. Early reviews are outstanding.
Perfect. Kids movie?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll take James. Okay.
Megalopolis.
Stupid fucking name.
That's the new Francis Ford Coppola movie that's getting panned. But yeah. I mean, getting you got to see it. Yeah. Got to see it. Got to see it.
It's a whole disaster.
I got my ticket to Joker 2.
Which apparently is so bad, it's hilarious.
I mean, it's meant to be like weirdo musical something or other.
That's the Gaga.
With Gaga as Harley Quinn.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Ooh, la, la.
There's a musical element. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it's meant to be a musical from what I understand.
It wow. looks crazy, stupid. Well, you do crazy. It so we don't have to. Bill, thank you so much. Godspeed. Hey, AJ, good thanks. Luck.
And thank you all for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.